Welcome to Adapted, the podcast where we discuss adaptations of various forms. I'm Tom, and with me is...
Matt.
Born in 1849 in Stockholm, Sweden, August Strindberg became the great rival of Henrik Ibsen after Strindberg's strongly negative response to A Doll's House. He started, Strindberg did, with these naturalistic plays like The Father and Miss Julie from 1887 and 88. Soon after this, he went completely insane and wrote no plays for 6 years, but kept a journal, which he converted into his autobiography titled Inferno, which sounds like a fun read, which came out in...
Never read that. I mean, I know he did go completely and utterly insane. It's not like his later plays don't reflect that, but that sounds fun.
Yeah. Apparently he thought witches were trying to kill him. He just developed...
Sounds about right. I mean, even his earlier... He's an odd man.
Yeah, he's an odd man. He was married a bunch of times. I think there was this like class problem because his father was well-to-do, but his mother apparently was a servant who he married. So,
oh, well, that would explain some things.
But apparently 1897, that was his conversion period. He went from naturalism to like this esoteric occultist Swinborganism
I mean, it's no one else doing anything like this. He's off his rocker in his later... His later stuff is great. I don't know if anybody's done any movies of it, but his later stuff is off the charts.
Yeah, he goes quite a bit mad. I mean, it seems like he's recovering from his crazy, but it's just in his work. And so from 1897 to 1912, which was the year of his death, he then wrote over 30 plays. It seems like madness was his muse. He apparently remained interested in naturalism, but he started to work on Swedish history plays, and then probably what he's most famous for, dream plays. And that's where you have things like Dream Play, the trilogy to Damascus, and then Ghost Sonata, which...
Ghost Sonata, which
we were both involved with about...
I was in it,
years.
And who directed that
and
one?
I directed it. And I directed it. Yeah, that was
in the state of Virginia.
In the state of Virginia. Oh, that right.
I had the line where I had to say state of virginity, and everyone kept saying... I think it was your note or someone else who kept saying, it sounds like you're saying in the state of Virginia.
Okay, I forgot that. Yeah, that was the... I think maybe there was a stronger Massachusetts accent at that point.
That might have been a bit more.
I just remember we have a common friend, Eric, who played the big fat chef at the end, the vampire chef.
He's playing suck to in the kitchen, or isn't that the line or something?
It's something like he's like a vampire, but it's unclear what type of...
It was
of
like he's playing suck to the children in the kitchen or something like that. And I remember being like, I need to retranslate that line.
But I wasn't sure, like, should it be really funny and over the top? And Eric was like, yes. And he comes out with this big fat suit, and it worked really, really well.
That was a great play. I enjoyed that one.
That was fun. So he does those, even though he keeps doing these like long Swedish history plays also at the same time. But returning to his naturalistic work, and Miss Julie is one of those, I didn't realize this, but he has a prelude to Miss Julie in which he talks about how much he owes to Zola. And he really is interested in naturalism. He thinks Zola is the person who's on the right track with turning theater into an experimental laboratory. And he's deliberately moving away from the well-formed play, the type of thing you see with Ibsen. He doesn't like plot-based stuff. He doesn't like social problem plays. The Doll's House, his response to Doll's House is basically, this is absolute feminist garbage, is what he referred to it
as. I mean, it's not feminist, but it is garbage. I mean,
It is a play based in melodramatic conventions. It is plot driven, and it is a social problem play.
Yeah, which are annoying, and they just don't tend to age all that well.
Yeah, and he hated those. He started to hate plot based plays because he didn't think it captured the psychological process, and so he wanted to see the machinery of a play, which is, he thought, the machinery of the individual. And he has these metaphors of seeing how the magician does his trick. And how do you see them, how the magician does his trick? Well, you do a theatrical laboratory experiment thing where you reveal the psychological underpinnings of the character, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Later, Strindberg seeks to destroy even character, leaving behind social roles and, excuse me, turning characters into mere social roles rather than psychologically rich people. You could see that in
Very
a dream play.
Brechtian.
Kind of, yeah, I guess
Mean, it's
so.
not, but
It's not, but you could see it as the ancestor of that move,
yeah.
right? You see that in a dream play where there's at one point an argument between four intellectuals, and one of them is just theologian, one of them is scientist, and
Yeah,
one of
that's
them is
very Brechtian.
mathematician.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're
It's
just,
very
you know.
Wojciech. I assume that, Wojciech would have been around at that time. That's actually, it's like Wojciech Brecht, like this is a.
Yeah, actually, if you think like dream play is, I want to say 1901, I
Yeah, it's
think.
about right, I think, yeah.
That's when Wojciech would have been, it would have been an opera by that point. I think Berg had
Wojciech, I
already.
think, is like star. I think Wojciech is like published in off form. I think it's like 1890, I want to say.
Yeah, I think it's rediscovered in 1870s, published then, and then it maybe it's a little later that it becomes an opera.
The
Maybe it's the
opera, I think, is a
second
little later,
decade.
but I'm pretty sure the as a text, it would have been reasonably
Circulating.
available by certainly by 1901. I'm pretty sure it would have been.
Yeah.
So I can see that being an influence, but.
Yeah, I wonder if you, that would be interesting if you read Wojciech. I haven't looked that up. And yeah, he pushes against the Aristotelian idea of the probable and says, by contrast, everything is possible. And he does this by having plays taking place inside the consciousness of the dreamer. So that's his pretentious little thing, though it, I think it's also accurate. Strindberg was nominated for the Nobel Prize in 1911. That's the year Maeterlinck won. And he was one of 28 writers who were nominated that year. He was nominated by Nathan Söderblom, a pastor who was both the pastor of Strindberg and Alfred Nobel. And Söderblom went on to win the Nobel Peace Prize in 1930. So he himself was pretty accomplished. However, according to the Nobel Committee, the nomination arrived a little too late, and so they didn't consider Strindberg seriously. And this is why Maurice Maeterlinck, the everybody's favorite playwright, Maurice Maeterlinck, was the 1911 Nobel Prize winner. And obviously, Strindberg dies the year after, so he doesn't have another chance to get the prize. Apparently, as early as 1909, he was telling people he was expecting it, that he thought he deserved it and was expecting it. So, if
Yeah,
only
I mean,
his.
he could. I mean, he certainly might have deserved it. They were never going to give it to him.
I don't think, based upon what we've read,
Based upon
his
what we know, I
stuff
mean,
is
his stuff is.
wildly inappropriate
Yeah, I
for a
mean, his
Nobel
stuff
Prize.
is. I mean, his early stuff is not. If they didn't think Ibsen was, positive, what's the not positive, uplifting? What is the
Yeah,
word they use?
uplifting and ideal. He's not.
Ideal. If they didn't think Ibsen was ideal enough, even Strindberg's sort of normal stuff is not going to. Is even less idealistic, and his later stuff is just whack. It's
Yeah.
great, but it's totally whack-a-doodle. There's
Yeah.
no way they could ever have read Ghost Sonata or any of those later plays and gone, yeah, this is should we go with the Bluebird or the Bluebird of Happiness or the Evil Chef,
The evil vampire
the Evil
fat chef.
Vampire Chef, like.
How is it a vampire? It's
We,
yeah, they're
you know, but that's not even an exaggeration. That is in it,
that's in the play,
and then
yeah.
there's isn't there like the mother who lives in the closet?
There is the mother who's like a parrot who is like wrapped up in
Yeah, she's wrapped up like a
bandages,
yeah as a
like a
mummy.
mummy. It's no, it's not a parrot, she's a mummy. That's
She's a
right.
mummy, and
She's
doesn't she live in the closet?
Yeah, she lives in the closet and she's wrapped up like a mummy for some reason. And she comes out to give commentary on what's happening.
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, that's completely insane. It's
Yeah.
great. It's really
It's
wonderful, but it's not the Bluebird with bread and sugar. Like if that's what they were picking, then they were not going to pick the Vampire Chef and the
Yeah.
mother, the mummy mother living in the closet.
Yeah, I can imagine there his earlier stuff, which is just it's about sex to a large degree. I mean, a lot of it is almost like it's like
I mean, the father isn't
S&M.
quite. Yeah, I mean, well, Miss Julie is.
Miss
I
Julie
mean,
is.
Miss Julie is essentially a 19th century S&M thing. But the father is even sort of, it's not worse, but it's sort of the father isn't sexual per se, but it's just like about a mother who doesn't like that the father gets to have a say in how the daughter is being raised, and she wants her to be an artist, so then she basically gaslights the dad and convinces him to go insane and accuse her of basically having fathered the child elsewhere, and then gets him committed to insane asylum so she can raise the child by herself. Like, that's essentially the play. So it's not like a happy play.
No, it's all kind of s pseudo scandalous material. It just never would have worked for the
No,
committee. There's
he
no
never was
way
going
he
to
would have
win.
won.
He could have won if he'd li you know, obviously if he'd been writing that stuff in the 1950s, it wouldn't have been shocking. But if he'd lived maybe to the 30s, he might have had a shot. But 1910, there was no way.
No. But anyway, moving on from that, I was real. So this is the first time I've read this play, I think, since college. So it's been probably 20 years since I've read this play. And I was surprised how I was surprised at the naturalism of it. I had forgotten entirely about the naturalism. I remember the play. I remember the power dynamic in it of the servant and the master and all that type of thing. The Zola, or the debt to Zola that's there, is very surpri was surprising to me. It's obvious when you think about it, but it's so much better than Zola.
Benzola, yeah.
Yeah, it's so much better. With
I mean,
Zola,
maybe
there's
it's just because Zola wants to show you all the things he knows. You know, he just wants to put in there his whole, like, and then their melancholic processes were to, you know, it's like he just wants to show you that he's read the latest discourses on psychology. Whereas, like, you can't really do that in a play. It's a lot harder. So even if he does want it in there, he can't discourse on it.
It's also there's just so much more involved in the what comes out of the relationship between them, right? And like Therese Raquin, it is the type of woman who shouldn't be put into that environment, who's put into that environment. And so she goes kind of like a little sexually mad or whatnot. Here, there's just all of these other inputs that he's considering when he's considering these characters, and the inputs are weird. Like, she is the product of like a feminist, like the main character, Miss Julie, the title character. Her mother is this like feminist servant woman, and the father is a count. And so you have this sort of half breed almost. There's almost something eugenic about the play that's
Oh,
really,
yeah.
really interesting. And you also have this idea of like you research their history, and it turns out that she's the descendant of a miller who spent one night with a prince, many, many centuries ago. And you have his idea of Jean's idea, the main character. He has this sort of fantasy of a democratic country being a means of liberation, that he could go there and not be a servant anymore, that his sort of psychological training is predicated on the political in a certain way, which I don't think the play disproves or proves. It just leaves it there as a
Yeah, he's
consideration.
not interested in answers. This is not a play that's giving
No.
you answers, no.
No. And most good plays aren't.
No.
But it's just so much, and it's just a little thing. It's just one bit of a scene, and then they move on. But you could see how that little seed grows or affects other aspects of the play and of these characters. And so it's just so much more interesting than the other naturalisms, other naturalist works I've read. Like, it's like 10 times more interesting than Balzac. It's
It
still
also
a
it's I
mystery
mean
to me.
it is naturalism, but it's not quite. I mean, like, I've read it. I read it, I don't remember, maybe like 20, maybe like 8 years ago, 7, 8 years ago, and I saw a production of it in New York, in on it was at the really weird theater on Park Avenue, and I think it's like sponsored by the Danish consulate.
Okay.
And so they do, Danish plays. And it's just like it's a really weird little theater, but I went to go see it. And that would have been maybe 2010, maybe. So I have seen a production of it. So it's still it maybe this is just because I know Strindberg, his later stuff. It does have this weird, somewhat dreamy, absurdist quality to it. Like there is just a sense of, and again, it might just be the way it's being presented, of like displacement of why are it again, it almost has an absurdist quality, a little bit of just like, why are these people here? Why doesn't he leave? Why is, there is sort of just this sense of just something odd about the scenario, and it
Who's
just
Afraid of Virginia Woolf? A feel.
yeah, maybe that it's it that's it that's what it is. It's a Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf kind of scenario where there's just it's something uncomfortable about it, and it's not completely explainable by the character's psychology. And so you do just kind of go, something's off, something's wrong here. And so it is naturalism, like, but it's also a slightly off-kilter one, and I think that's why it probably works better than Zola. Maybe.
Yeah, and we should talk about the setting. Maybe give a brief plot
Yeah.
description. There's not much of a plot. There's a servant, John or Jean, whatever, whatever,
Gene.
Jean, whatever you want. I've read the translation I read, it was John, but
The translation I have is John, yeah, but
Christine is his another servant who's also kind of his girlfriend, is his main squeeze. And then there's Miss Julie, who is the daughter of the Count, who obviously he's the person in charge of this estate. And they're in the cellar and kind of the servant area on Midsummer Eve, which is, I think, the longest day of the year, right? The sun just doesn't set on Midsummer Eve. And there's this celebration going on, and they end up in the three of them in these close quarters, and it really is just Julie and Jean, who are together, and he has witnessed her break off her engagement after a little pseudo S&M play with her fiance, and they end up getting into this kind of sexual power dynamic where he is the servant, but then he seems to take control. At one point they have sex, and then they decide they're going to leave, and then they don't leave because actually nobody has any money, even if she is a count. And so that's what's going on here. And the setting Pat's talking about is, it's really weird. It's late at night, but it's everybody's celebrating, right? There's a big
And
party
the
going
sun
on,
is supposed to be out.
and the sun
Like
is up.
it's so
Yeah.
there's like that's obviously I understand why the sun would be out. I said Denmark before, by the way. I meant
Yeah,
Sweden.
no, I
Yeah. But it's because it's I'm like Denmark wouldn't be that. I'm like, oh, but Sweden. Oh, right, Sweden. But there is something still, I know why it's happening, but there is something unnatural. Like it's just, even though it is totally natural, but there's something odd. This sort of has a little bit of not quite, it's like a carnival, but not carnival. Like there's just something very strange about that.
Well,
If you,
Carnival is a really, really good comparison. I didn't think of that because,
it just popped into my head, yeah.
yeah, because in Carnival, it's a celebration period, but everybody changes roles, right? That's the idea. Carnival is kind of a descendant of the Saturnalia, where it's like the servant is the master is the servant. And so that kind of festive atmosphere where we all lose our role, our position, that's what's going on. I
That's
think
what's
this
going on here.
is
Didn't
a
we talk about that with
carnival.
Rabelais and his world? Didn't we talk about that with someone? Which
Yeah, I
one was
think we
that?
did. I don't think we didn't discuss that book at ever. That might have
Okay.
come up. I don't remember when we talked about Carnival.
I can't remember at
We
all.
talked about it with Dostoevsky and with Bakunin, because
Yeah,
Bakunin
Bakunin, yeah.
writes about Carnival a lot. But I don't
I
remember
can't
what
remember what
episode
movie
that
we talked about it
was.
with,
Yeah,
yeah. We definitely did at some point. So back to Carnival.
you're absolutely right. That's what's going on. And there's scenes where just everybody runs in and like dances. Just all these peasants run into the room and they have to go hide, because if they get caught with if the servant is caught with the miss the daughter of the house, they're going to get in trouble. And so all these people just run in and start dancing crazily, and they're presumably off to the side having sex while this is going on. And so it's this, you're right, it's just this kind of feeling of like unhinged.
Yeah, there's
Like,
something's wrong. Like, why is this happening? Why is this person here? Yeah, the sun is out and it's 2 a.m. Yeah, it's carnival. People are dancing in the cellar. Like, it just has this odd, un sort of just you can't quite grip it. You know, it's sort of this out of the corner of your eye feeling of it's like you're viewing the whole scene out of the corner of your eye. Like they're trying to hide half the time. And so you're just kind of viewing it in this sort of oblique manner. It has such an odd quality to it.
Yeah, and it informs, you can imagine why this person would become a surrealist, right? Because the
Yeah.
surrealism is just the next extension, because everything here has a naturalist explanation. You could say, you know, it's the Midsummer
It's midsummer.
celebration,
That's
right? It's
we're
the
in
sun is
Sweden.
out,
We're
this is
very
what we
far
do.
north. This is what happens there.
But it's, as you say, it's just, it allows for this kind of unworldly behavior. So yeah, that's a good observation. Getting into Jean or Jean or whatever, and Miss Julie, the what I liked about the movie a lot, and it's
The
hard
movie is
to,
good.
the movie's really good, it's a good interpretation,
It's
but
very good.
what's hard to necessarily see in just a reading of it is the kind of intense sexuality of it. This whole thing is just like this giant kind of, it's like an S&M flirtation. That's what it's like.
Yeah.
Do you do, it's almost, I can imagine like two like S&M people being like, they don't know if the other one does it. They're
Yeah,
like, do you,
do you
are you,
and
do,
if
would you,
they bring up the topic and they're wrong, it
it's
could
gonna be
be really
bad.
bad for either of them. So they're very much skirting the, because they also it's a 1870s play. They still no matter what, they have to sort of skirt the topic. So you're sort of getting this very oblique references with lots of riders' whips and dog leash references. It's like,
Yeah, and some of it is initially very obvious. Like there's a scene in the beginning where they talk about their dreams, Julie and
yeah.
John, and that's a little like, we get it, right? And her dream is, I imagine what, like falling down out of a tree and going down, and he's like, I imagine climbing up a tree and climbing up and up and up. You're like,
Yeah,
okay, this is,
that was a weaker one of the weaker
yeah,
moments.
that's kind of a weaker moment where he sort of, it's
It's
almost
just
like a
two on the
thesis
head. It's
statement.
two on the head.
Yeah, that's, it's, that was my affirming, oh, this is his thesis statement, is when you're in a position of power, you fantasize about being, being a servant, but your conditioning doesn't allow that to happen. That's the, and vice versa with the servant. I don't think, however, that the play subverts that ever. I think it kind of affirms that is how it is.
I think it's different, but
How
I
so?
think there's something different. I think the way I've always read it is that it's more a question of attempting to overcome what Strindberg sees as natural division with artificial division. In sort of the idea being that like a natural division is the division between a man and a woman. But the artificial division is between class, and she's attempting to use her class to sort of overcome her gender and sort of dominate, whereas it just ends up being he dominates her because she's trying to use her class to dominate a man. And in this sort of Strindbergian view, that's just not the way nature works. Man dominates a woman. So it doesn't matter. The class distinction essentially takes over here. But when it comes in their relationship, but when it comes to John Jean's relationship with others, he immediately goes right back into his conditioning. So the nat the sort of the sort of unnatural stratification takes over as soon as he talks to the Duke. Because that still exists, it's not being overcome, but her sort of submission to him does not allow her to then take over in a cycle, in a sexual or a social social or psychological sense, she sort of becomes his sort of slave, to lack a word here, right? And I think that's sort of what's going on. So I think it's he does dominate, but he dominates not, he can't, he doesn't overcome his class distinction, but he does overcome it when she goes down, essentially, right? So I think there is a sense that he does overcome her, but only because she gives up her class distinction because she wants to overcome her gender distinction.
Yeah,
I think that's sort of what's going on
I
here.
think that's true because the other ingredient is the feminist mother who we see in the movie. We don't see it in the play. That
They do a
character
great job with that in the movie.
really works for us.
That really, really
It's
works.
even
It's great.
funny. Like I was laughing at one point with
Yeah.
the, but
It really works because I remembered it. I actually saw the movie, then I read the play again, and I haven't read it in probably 7 or 8 years, so I'd kind of forgotten about pieces of it. So watching the movie, I knew obviously parts of it had been invented, and then I'm like, I don't remember that, and then I'm like, oh yeah, that's not in there. So it's a great they do that's a really th this is a good adaptation. It knows that it can't just take the play and restage the play with a camera, so it does really good stuff with as a film. It does some really good stuff that a play can't do, and it really adds quite a bit to it. So yes, the whole thing with the mother in the movie is great.
It's great. And we could probably use this as a transition into the movie as well, and talking about the mother. So this is the 1951 Swedish version from Alf Schoenberg, who was a big deal back in the day. Actually, Ingmar Bergman worked as his assistant director, and not on this, but on other projects. And you had Anita Björk, who almost became a big star for Hitchcock. But the producers realized she had a child from her first marriage while hanging out with her boyfriend, and when she came to America, and they did not like that, so they insisted she be recast for the Hitchcock movie. I don't remember what Hitchcock movie it is, so I don't think she had that kind of she didn't get into the American cycle very well, but she's wonderful in
She's
it.
great. She's very
Yeah,
good.
she's very good. And Ulf Pom is the is John
Jean.
and Jean John in this. But anyway, so with the mother, so a few things. The mother, first of all, is a poor woman, right? Or she's from the peasantry. And she's also a kind of rabid feminist. And with Strindberg, feminists are rabid, right? They're bad. It's a bad thing. And what
Strindberg might have been a mild misogynist.
it's I
Mild.
Yeah, just a little bit. I just remember him saying, like, how many?
He says some pretty awful things.
Yeah, he's had three failed marriages. So, I don't think he. I think he struggled with women. But anyway, so she's this kind of like, but she's also, as you're saying, there's this kind of natural category and there's the social category. It seems like the mother is the person who attempts to subvert the who attempts to subvert the social category through a perversion of the natural,
Yeah.
right? Which is what's going on. And so what ends up happening, and they traumatize this in the movie, they just talk about it in the play,
Somewhat
is
comically.
it's really funny. But they have Miss Julie, as when she's born, dress as a boy and do boy work, and then everybody on the plant on the estate who's a girl has to do the work the men do, and the men have to do like the sewing and the work the women do, in this effort to kind of revolutionize society by revolutionizing nature. And I think your point is accurate, which is you can revolutionize society, but you can't do it vis-a-vis nature.
Nature. You can't overcome. I mean, they literally just show like these women trying to like lift like black like most of them cannot pick up the hammer. They're trying to show them lifting like carts, and they're like they can't do it. And so
The men are trying to sew and the sewing machine
yeah,
is
you know,
torn
and
up.
it's it again like I guess men can sew, but there's certainly an element here of like you're not going to accomplish your revolution this way. this is the wrong way to go about it. It's just going to lead to a lot of broken things, which is exactly what happens. And so there is this sense here of this is not the way to create the revolution. Yeah.
Yeah, it creates kind of a demonic thing, and the movie is great because they show the mother, they show all of this, they dramatize it, and it's she's
She's
really good.
wonderful.
She's
She's
wonder. She's
wonderful.
the she's my favorite part of this, and
She comes. So, no, I don't keep going.
you say it. Go for it. Go for
My favorite moment. What was your favorite moment with her?
with her. Oh, so the actress, I should say, is Lisi Alden. My favorite moment is, so they don't have a proper wedding, and then she goes, okay, I'm
This
gonna
is
have a
gonna be this. Yeah,
wedding,
this is gonna be a thing.
and so she sets the house on
It's on
fire
fire.
and she comes in from the flames
Exact
and
same.
they
Yeah, I
play
love.
the
Yeah.
wedding march when she
They play the
comes
wedding
in
march. She
and she
walks through
walks
the
in.
flames in her wedding dress. I'm like, this is Miss Havisham from hell. It's the
Yes,
best.
it's
Really, and it sounds
so
over
good.
the top. It's not. It's
It,
really
it's
good.
f funny to like when the wedding march starts, I laughed out loud. It's
And
perfect.
they just have her coming through the door with the smile on her face. It's the exact moment I was going to say. It's like she comes through the door with this like smile on her face. She walks in. It's great. She is a that actress is wonderful too. It's a great sequence.
Yeah, and then the father tries to kill himself and he can't, because it turns out she in order to build back the house, they have to borrow money from the mother's lover, and that's the ultimate like degradation. And it just it and the father's really good in it too. Anders
Yeah, he's pretty
Heinrichsen,
good.
yeah, is
No
also
one's really, there's no
no,
subpar performances that I could see.
yeah, no, it all works really, really well. And those sequences are they're kind of I mean. The two of them are really wonderful, the two actors who played Julie and John. But those sequences are
They're
wonderful,
also, they remind
wonderful
me of
additions.
Rebecca. Like they sort of have that Rebecca quality to them.
Yeah, there's something almost, yeah, something kind of gothic about
Yeah.
it. And her painting is a big thing in this. The paintings of the past people who were past counts who used to run this estate, as well as her painting, which kind of looks down upon Miss Julie as she kills herself, which is the last thing we see, right? The camera pans up to her
Yeah, to her painting, yeah.
face, yeah, the face of the mother
And even
as she
just
looks down.
camera work, they do a really nice job. And it, you know, it's sort of a thematic element that's being made, but they do a nice job with it. The camera work is every single time. There's never any like, you know, sort of the wavy lines as we go into the past. They'll usually just like show a painting or an object and then, you know, in the present, and then it'll pan away and you know you're in the past because you can tell that something has shifted. And the person who was there is no longer there, or something is different, and it will be the past. And then when they want to go back to the present, they'll pick an object that exists in the present, focus on it, and then move back again, and then it will be the present again. So there's this really cool editing technique going on here that makes it very clear that the past and the present are influencing one another. And there's this sense that of continuity that's being created with the filming. It's a nice technical sort of detail that works really well to reinforce a theme. It's a nice way of doing it.
It is it's the blocking is all purposeful. It's very well thought out blocking throughout the thing. And that it's the only I think it's the only production of this play I've seen. I know very recently in 2014, Liv Ullmann, who was the mother of Ingmar Bergman's child, she directed a version with Jessica Chastain and who's the guy who plays the penguin?
The Penguin?
Colin Firth, that's
Oh, I was
Colin,
like the yeah.
the new
Oh.
penguin.
Yeah, that's not good. That's not good casting.
No, not at all. Yeah, which I think everybody has told me to avoid, and I have.
Yeah, the version I saw in New York was pretty weak. It wasn't very good. They definitely made Gene a bit too much of a patsy, and then too much of a like, no, I'm in charge. You know, it was just like they had his shift basically be like Angel after he has sex. You know, this is like, is that a good reference?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, because he literally just turns like demonic
Does
after,
it, how many people have watched Buffy?
That's what I was like, I don't know, maybe
I
that
feel
references.
like if you're listening to this show, maybe you've seen
Maybe you've
Buffy.
seen Buffy. So anyway, after Angel has sex with Buffy, he turns back into a demon. So this is sort of what's going on here, is he's just like, no, Miss Julie, please don't do that. And then after he basically sleeps with her, I remember in that production, he's like, no, I have the whip. This is really your this
Well,
is a bad production.
what this gets, which it's harder to get with the read, and I think this is the actor who plays John Ulf Palme or Palme, however you say it. It's a flirtation all the way through, right? He's at certain times, yeah, he's upset or whatnot, but even in the beginning, he is. There's a kind of sense of he's guiding the ship. Even when he's being submissive in a constructive way. And it should be an intense flirtation between them. Like he's really, really enjoying himself with what is happening. Which it comes across in this. She is far more unstable, right? She's far
Yeah,
less consistent.
she's a lot. She's got a head of gabbler kind of feel to her in this. She definitely strikes you as, ooh, she's a little, yeah, she's a little baddie.
Yeah, you almost see like she needs to be kind of brought under, and there isn't an appropriate circumstance she finds herself in which to be brought under. Had she been raised in a way Strindberg would have approved of, she would have been prepared for her social circumstances, and she's not. Right. As you're saying before, there's this kind of tension between the natural and the social. And that comes out in this production, is that she's put in an impossible position. And so her battiness is just no one built the right cage for her. Right. No, or they told her she didn't have to be in a cage. And sorry, you kind of have to be, you can't just be independent. This is not a liberal humanistic play.
No,
Liberation is
this
not a
is
good
not.
thing at all.
No.
And that's not
For
this.
anyone, like to be clear, this is not a. No one should be free, is almost the structure of this play. Everyone is subject to some cage. Pick your cage. If you don't want to be in a cage, you die. Like that's sort of the.
Yeah, and I don't even know if you can pick your cage.
I guess that's true. You don't get to pick your
I think
cage.
that's the
Accept your
problem.
cage.
Yeah, you accept
Because
your cage.
once you're removed from your cage, you just die. Like that's it. That's your choice. Accept your cage
And if
or die.
and I think revolution is possible. I think it's
Well, you
just,
can move from one cage to another cage.
you can change things. It's just really hard. And I think there's a backstop. There's only so much you can change. You can't change your nature, right? As you said earlier. That doesn't mean everything else can get thrown up in the air, but I just think that.
Well, your nature is a cage. Like how what you are and who you are
It's
and sort of
confining,
your structure is a cage. You have to accept that cage. You can alter your you can maybe alter the cage within a cage kind of thing. The sort of idea. Again, that's why I think he's more willing to accept that social environments could alter, that you can make those changes over many generations or over significant periods of time. You can alter that, but the Napoleonic Revolution is just going to crash and burn. That attempt of we're going to change it all now, that'll never work. You're going to end up killing everyone. Like I think that seems to be almost the mindset that he's going with. Like that social change is possible, not now, maybe later, maybe over a long period of time.
Or these are the wrong people for it? Because I think of that scene again where they're seriously considering leaving. At one point, they've had sex, and it's kind of like clearly nobody's used protection, so the danger is that there's a pregnancy possibly. Like, okay, we have to leave now. We have to go. How much money do you have? We'll get on a train. We can catch the 6:20. And it's clear Julie's really into it. I love the way this guy plays it, where you're not entirely sure if he's serious or if he's just putting her on. But he does have this point. They have this conversation where it's just like, you will go back to being a servant. You, Julie, will go back to being a servant. But I, by being a servant, can rise up and become a count. I just need to go to a republic, he says. We just need to go somewhere where I can make money, and we could start a hotel, and then you'll return to a servant, and I'll make enough money, and I'll be a count, not in name, but in wealth, so to speak. So there seems to be this idea of lateral looking, where you could look towards other countries or other ways society is set up, and potentially find something there. My guess is that Strindberg is neither wild about tradition or this kind of conservative notion of preserving society, as you see with the church. The church is not depicted very well in this play or in this movie, but I don't know if he sees social democracy as a alternative that is going to lead anywhere good either.
I mean, I think it's just not going to lead to anywhere good because a figure like Gene, even if he did get to a republic, is not going to be successful. He's too smarmy and slimy, and he's gonna crash and burn there. That's his nature. He's never going to be anything but a servant. He'll never be. So that maybe this is just a false hope for him. That sending him to a republic or somewhere where he could be free. He's not actually going to be free. He's going to crash and burn and have to
Yeah,
come back
wherever it is.
here like the prodigal son kind of thing. That's just the.
Yeah, that's the problem. And so maybe it's other people can be can go into a republic, but I don't believe that. I don't think that's in the play.
I don't think that's in the play. I don't think Strindberg's suggesting that.
I don't think
There's
he's
no
suggesting that.
figure. It's not like Cherry Orchard where you've got the guy who buys the cherry orchard, who's the, like I rose up from being a serf to buying the cherry orchard. You don't have any figure like that. No,
No.
no one in this play is overcoming their overcoming their
But
odds.
the old ways are also crap, right? The church is crap. He has no respect for the church, and I think the movie depicts that pretty well, right? The hierarchy that John finds himself in, it's not something Strindberg respects, right? I mean, it's not like
Yeah, I
these
mean, maybe
people
to your point,
deserve
people
it.
might. I mean, this might be maybe there's a little bit of a Nietzschean thing. Someone might overcome it, but it won't be him. Although this is in the 1870, so I don't think Nietzsche's.
Well, this play is 1889, I think.
Nietzsche was certainly around then.
1888. Yeah,
There's
Nietzsche was.
Nietzschean works published by then.
Yeah.
So there might be a little bit of a Nietzschean element here. It's almost like the Superman might be out there, but it ain't these guys. Like I don't know
Maybe that's it. Yeah, it's
if
just
there's an
kind of.
element of that here.
Yeah, that. There's a sort of nihilism in this. I think that's what it is eventually, is there's a nihilism in this play. There's just no hope
Be a
for
nihilist,
anyone.
Lebowski. You believe in nothing.
But I think he does. Like, what's the
I think
solution?
there isn't.
I mean, we
Accept
need,
your cage. I mean
I guess that's it.
that is the message of Miss Julie. Accept your cage.
And if you're raised your whole life not to accept your cage,
You're
not
going to
any cage,
die.
you might as well just
Kill yourself.
cut your head off like the bird.
That's why I say that this man is as if Ibsen was not uplifting enough for them, Strindberg is not
Definitely
gonna
not.
cut it. Because that's pretty much, I think that is pretty much the
Accept your
philosophy of this play.
cage or die.
Which, yeah.
Merry Christmas.
This is a great play. It's a really great play, and Strindberg is a great playwright, but he is not an uplifting man.
No,
He's
I
got to be one of the more depressing playwrights ever, right? I mean, his later stuff isn't much more uplifting.
No, I
Dream Play is
kind
about a god who comes to Earth to experience humanity and basically is like, my God, this is awful. I just want to
going
die.
back.
I just want to die. I went through everything. I experienced love and loss, and my God, They're right. Their
Yeah.
prayers are right. This is horrible. That's the
Imagine
whole.
if Jesus gave up. That's
Yeah, it's essentially a dream play. If Jesus came down and just went, man, this is bad, and just left. I mean, he's an exceedingly pessimistic playwright.
I think he is a religious playwright. I think he has a kind of Christian, mystical approach to things, but I don't think
I don't
he
think it's
knows what
t
to do with it.
Yeah, I mean, it almost feels like it's just part of his milieu more than it is a.
I think he sees it scientifically. I think he sees mysticism in the way a scientist sees a biological system, right? This is how it works. The idea of Christian forgiveness or redemption or whatnot, that sort of emotional feel of that isn't here. It's just mysticism is interesting. This is how it works. I'm going to use that. That's going to inform the feel and atmosphere of my plays.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I think there's he's a great playwright. He is not, and I don't know. I don't think many people do him. I think he works. People read him, I feel like, but you almost never see him performed because he's just so pessimistic.
I'm surprised because this play is, maybe it's the shortness of this play. You can't really charge Broadway tickets for a play that's, what is this, like an hour
It's an
long?
hour. It's like an hour plus. Maybe you can get an hour five if you really stretch out those dance numbers.
Which would be a really bad decision. But so I don't think, I mean, it's good in the sense of you only really have three characters. So you could do it on the cheap, which would make Broadway houses really happy, but it's just too short. You
You
can't
would
do
almost have to
that.
do like a slightly cut version of this with the father in rep kind of thing. Like you would do like an hour of this and an hour of the father.
That might
You know,
work.
you'd kind of have to do that. I just don't think anybody wants to see wants to hear the message of this thing.
I don't think they want to hear the message, and I don't think modern audiences are going to like this depiction of women.
No.
I think
And
that's
it's
going to
no better in
be,
the father. I mean, the father isn't a better depiction. And even if you want to argue that it's certainly not feminist, but that it's a more nuanced than it could be. Like again, the version that I saw, which was this sort of like namby-pamby Jean turning into Superman, you know, the Hulk, you know, it was just like, okay, this is just wrong. But even if you wanted to have a more nuanced depiction than that, it just doesn't fit with modern sensibilities. But it's a really interesting historical point, and it's a really his ideas are still have something to be said even if it's just to argue with them. I think there are more people in this world who would agree with this play than would be comfortable admitting they agree with this play.
Yeah, I think this play would be, it would be a good thing for modern people to discuss, right?
Yes.
It's a good launching point for a conversation. The problem with a lot of theaters is they sort of want the play to affirm a particular side, and usually it's pretty obvious what side they want the play to affirm. This play is not going to affirm a side, and if it does, it's not going to be the one that
The people want it to affirm
the producers are
that's
going to
gonna get
want
people,
it to
yeah, it's
them.
gonna get people in the seats. But I think that it's a very valuable discussion. Like there's a lot going on in this play that's worth talking about. And I don't think people really want to have that type of conversation. But I do think there are, you know, if you could show this to if you forced everyone in the country, forced everyone who's gonna go see a Broadway show to watch this play, many people would be upset about it. If you showed it to many people in the country, many of them would go, yeah, I get it. You know, it would be like, I think you'd have a significant portion of the country, and that's the problem. You can't just ignore it. That's out there. You have to address the topic. You can't just pretend it doesn't exist because, well, I guess you can if you don't want to spend $250 a ticket. Broadway prices are stupidly overexpensive, so it's just like, you know. But I think that's the thing, is that this play, it speaks to people, just not the people who are going to the theater.
That's a very good way to put it. Speaks to the to the people, but not the ones going to the
to the
theater.
theater, so it's not going to be produced.
Indeed. All right, on that note, do we have anything else we want to share about Miss Julie, Strindberg, Lars von Trier, anything else?
Yeah, just Strindberg wasn't going to win the Nobel Prize. I don't know what he did. I don't know what he
Yeah.
thought. Great,
Yeah, I don't know what
great
he.
plays, not going to win the Nobel Prize.
Yeah, well, I guess that minister had a lot of sway, but not enough.
You can rate and review this show anywhere fine podcasts are available. For those viewing in YouTube land, if you haven't already, please like this video, subscribe to the Talking Studios channel for all our exciting content, and follow us on social media at Talking Studios. Check out other shows by Talking Studios, including Talking Pictures Trivia, where we explore movies through trivia, Keep Making Movies, where we explore micro-budget films, Limited Lexicon, where we play through text-based adventure games, and Get the Point, where we slowly reveal a movie poster and try to guess which movie poster it is. Got a question for us? Call the Talking Studios hotline at 201-467-8679 and leave a message. It may be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Adapt It, wherever fine podcasts are found.
Join us next week when we discuss Henry James's The Turn of the Screw and Jack Clayton's film adaptation, The Innocents. See you then.
Wow, Talking Studios.
Next week, we'll be covering Henry James, Turn of the Screw, and the film adaptation, The Innocents. Pat, if you were going to direct a, or produce rather, a new version of Turn of the Screw, who would you hire to direct it?
I'm going to go with the who would I not to
Okay,
get
who
to
would
do
you
it. So
not?
I would not get George Romero to do this one. I mean, hilariously bad
Oh,
choice.
Lord. Yeah. There would be no ambiguity. It would be the
No.
least ambiguous
It'd be...
version of this story ever. Oh,
So that would be, that's it. That's all I got. Just
I just,
go with George Romero.
I would love it, like, to end with like them, not Miles dying, but like him picking up a gun and just shooting Quince as he's like coming over the tower or
Yeah,
something
is it,
like
yeah, are
that.
they like, or no, he would have to like, it would be more like Quince would like pick up Miles and throw him off the tower. It would be something like that. Like, you'd see the body like falling, but made it Ma, top of the world as he like
Yeah,
throws the.
no. What you have to, this is how you would do it. This is how you would do it. So the governess, she sees the ghost, who's now
Yes.
a zombie, and then she shoots him and kills him. And she's like, "I've done it." And then the housemaid comes out and goes, "Oh no, she's become a zombie," and then shoots her, even though she's not a zombie.
Ah, yes,
And
that would
that
be
would be the depressing ending that would
got
fit
it.
in.
Yeah, that's you've got it. You
We've
you've
got it.
fixed Henry James.
Yes, thank God for George Romero.
Yeah, what about you? Whom would you guess to direct
I'm
this?
going to do someone who I think more or less did it in the film The Others,
Oh
which is
yeah.
the director of that, Alejandro Amenábar. I think
Yeah,
I pronounced his
that
name
actually
correctly.
is a I like that movie.
I like that movie too,
I
yeah.
think that's actually a good movie. I think it's very
Yeah.
atmospheric and pretty darn creepy. And it is. It's essentially, it's not obviously exactly the same, but it's clearly it, he's cheating off of his manuscript, clearly cribbed his notes.
From James.
Yeah, but
So
it's a good, that's a good movie. I think that movie is a creepy movie.
Yeah, I saw that again recently, and it held up. I had seen
Yeah,
it in
I've heard it's held
theaters
up pretty well, yeah.
in 20 some odd years ago, and I just saw it again for Halloween. And yeah, it was a very good film. I think this guy would be do a fine job with this material.
I would agree.
All right.
Has he done anything else since then?
I have his wiki here. Let's see. He did The Sea Inside, which was well received, Spanish movie. The Captive is his most recent film, which
Never heard
is
of
a
it.
I guess he does a lot more Spanish movies.
Okay.
Oh, it's about Cervantes. It's about
Cervantes
Cervantes.
was a prisoner for a long period of time. I think he was
Yeah,
quite.
it's.
It did not go well for Cervantes. His
Yeah.
imprisonment was apparently quite literally torturous, from what I understand.
They cut his hand off, right?
Yeah, I don't know if they did. They cut his whole hand. I know it was bad. I didn't know. I know it was bad.
Yeah, so I guess it's about
Okay.
Cervantes is being
Let's see
captured.
some of his stuff because I do like that movie. We'll have to find something else by him.
The Sea Inside, I remember being a very good movie. That's that's No Country for Old Men guy. It's Javier Bardem.
Oh,
He's
Javier.
this.
Yeah, Javier Bardem. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's he's sort of, I think he is paralyzed, and so it's that kind of movie about that
No.
experience. Yeah.